What's going on, everybody? This is another Whiskey Web and Whatnot, your favorite podcast about brick masons. No, it's not. It's Whiskey Web and Whatnot. Yeah, I'm Robbie the Wagner. This is Charles William Carpenter III. We are live at the Multnomah Whiskey Library.
Oh, I'm glad that you could say that.
Yeah, did I say that?
Pronounce
right?
That? Yeah, I
Multnomah?
Think you did. Yeah,
I don't know,
Multnomah.
You nailed it.
Multnomah. Multnomah.
No, this is not the South.
Mid-noma.
You say all the letters in this one.
Okay. Jesus. Anyway.
Yeah, with our guest today, Jason Langsdorf. How's it going?
Hello. I'm great. I've already gotten to insult you once, so this is going to be a great episode.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This is,
keep them
that's
coming.
That's just the beginning of it. This is perfect. Well, I guess we're friends now.
Yeah.
You are now a frequent guest of the podcast, so.
Yeah. This is round two.
Yeah. 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 We'll keep them coming.
Well, since the last time you were on, do you do anything different?
I don't know.
I don't. Yeah. Hmm.
All right, we'll just end it there.
Yeah, I'm not sure where I was the last time I was on, but these days I am making developer content full time at Learn with Jason, and I'm a consultant for DevTools companies.
Very cool.
Cool.
I believe you upped your camera game since last time. That was probably.
Oh my God, we shouldn't talk about that. My wife gets very. I bought a little camera robot.
Yeah.
I love that little robot.
Didn't see this. We are going to talk about that later.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll talk about the robots.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we start with the important things.
Yes. So we're on Whiskey Web and Whatnot. So let's take a look at this tequila. No. It is a scotch today. Yeah. Bunahabin. Bunahabin? Bunahabin.
Boonhabin.
Boonhabin. Boonhabin. Boonhabin.
Yeah. Just keep. Yeah. You need to keep.
You got it.
Bunny hair. Okay. It's a single malt squat.
So within the first, we've been recording for under 2 minutes, and we have managed to offend the South and all of Scotland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Well, we want everyone to feel included in the offense.
I mean, we got another 58 minutes. Yeah. We can get everyone.
I will. Don't worry. I'll cover it. I'm really good at that. So this is an 18-year-old scotch from Islay. I'm going to keep doing it.
I'm not
sorry. Okay, 92.6 proof. I think I did mention that it is 18 years old. Yeah, that's all there is to do. Let's try it.
I learned about this scotch from Tanner at Front End Masters. Because every time you go to Front End Masters, after you do your recording, your workshop recording, Tanner has this locker full of really good scotch.
Oh, wow.
And if you are into that, he asked me to describe myself as an animal, and then he picked this scotch out, and he was right.
Okay. Okay. All right. Interesting. Wow. Now I'm really.
It's an interesting method.
I love the
color
of it.
Yeah.
I mean, 18 years old, so I would expect it to be quite dark.
Yeah. It smells like if you smell an ice wine, and it's like very sweet and like. Condensed, I guess.
Okay.
Condensed isn't maybe the right word.
Okay. I think
concentrated.
We're going,
concentrated.
That's the word, yeah. I think we're going down a similar path, except for I don't know that I would say ice wine. Are you familiar with RC Cola? Royal Crown Cola.
RC yeah.
Cola. It smells like flat RC Cola.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved RC.
I do get some of that. Yeah. Now
see,
that you mentioned
I'm not,
it. I think that was on the bottle, flat RC Cola.
Yeah, that's notes. What they say. They're like, Bunahabin, like Royal Crown Cola from Scotland. I'm from Scotland.
I'm not with him.
Oh, my God.
All right. I should taste this. You're having too much fun. All right. That was a different accent. You know, you'd think I had drank more of it.
I hadn't.
I just have
it
to
actually
do some
does taste kind of like flat cola, too.
So what I love about this is, this is aged in a sherry cask.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it picks up a lot of that sweetness.
Yeah.
So it's got... all of the, it's like big like a scotch.
Yeah.
And it's got that, you know, that kind of smoky.
Mm-hmm.
And also because of the sherry cask and because it's 18 years old, it just mellows out and you get this really, it's sweet.
Yeah.
And like if for anybody who doesn't drink scotch, like it's not sweet.
Yeah, usually
it's
like it
does
not.
This is probably the least scotchy scotch, that I've ever had, to be honest.
The Muckety Muck was pretty good.
And I think this is the, like, honestly, I think this is, scotch is one of those rare products where, like, the price tag matters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's a point of diminishing returns on scotch, but I have definitely noticed that if I buy a bottle of scotch and it's cheap, I understand why people don't like scotch.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So well, they go over the top, too, of, like, extra peat or way too much smoke. And,
yeah.
And some people like that, but I don't like that as much.
To me, scotches like that are like, take it how you will, people who really like hoppy IPAs. And the more hop that punches you in the face, that's what they're chasing. Yeah. And a lot, not a lot, because there's so many scotches, but there are scotches that really do kind of follow that for me. There's so much peat there that you're just like chasing the peat monster or whatever.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a tendency, especially amongst, like, I don't know, I feel like this is an American phenomenon to decide that if something is good, then more of that thing is better, and right. the most of that thing is best.
Yep.
And we stop worrying about whether or not it tastes good, and we start chasing like a content. Like I feel like there was a point in time where every microbrewery was going for like, is it IBUs or the hops content, right? And it was like a contest to get the highest IBUs. And it had just reached a point of absurdity.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't really drink beer, so I should stop talking about it. But but I stopped drinking beer largely because of that. Like I felt like most of the beers that I could get were like, what if we took a beer and then pushed it way past the point of being a beer to either being like, we put 18 pounds of chocolate in this, or we put more hops than anything else into this beer. Yeah. There's more hops than water in this beer. Yeah.
And then
you
it's
actually have
like
to chew it.
Yeah. And at that point, it kind of doesn't cease to be a beer, you know? It's like, that's the thing.
I know. Like you're having a light salad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get all of your carbs and vitamins and whatever else. You put some ranch dressing on it. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
it's good for the colon.
All right, I'm gonna regress back to this thing because still feel the cola on it. I'm getting like residuals of like a cigar almost, like a lot like cigar leaves, or like when I would smell a fresh cigar, I'm kind of.
I feel like it's got all the things that I like. I'm just gonna take another sip.
Yeah, I need to find some obscure descriptor here.
Yeah, you're lagging behind a little bit on that. While he figures out words, I think it is a very American thing to like, this is good, more must be better.
Mm.
I think that's how we end up with a bunch of like 6-foot lifted trucks that never go off road and crazy stuff like that. And I'm sorry if you have one, but
I think that you're right. Like I think we like the pursuit of more.
Yeah. One-upping arbitrarily.
And it's something that I've noticed infects us across like everything. You know, I do this. My pursuit of more is cameras. I'm always thinking about like, how can I get a better shot? I do not need a better shot. Like my iPhone gets a great shot these days, right? And so why am I worrying about frame rates or pixel density or any of these things? Like I can't upload any more pixels to YouTube the vast majority of people will literally never notice the difference between an HD iPhone shot and an HD shot on a Red camera after it hits YouTube's compression algorithm. So what am I doing? I don't know. I just decided I like it and I'm going to keep going. Right.
It's
and I think that we find a thing that we want to make our thing and we just go.
You become the connoisseur of that thing. And then,
it's a pursuit for the sake of the pursuit. Mm-hmm. Not really. It supersedes the goal.
Yeah. Yeah. That seems like a very American hobby, but I encourage you to keep on going because it's not a lifted truck. It's cool cameras. And then I'll know more about it.
Learn so that others can learn.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love this. So I added a little bit of water and I'm going to see how this opens up. And dear listener, by water, I mean distilled water through a dropper, 1, 2, 3.
He took it into the bathroom, put it under the faucet.
And then drop some crushed ice in there.
Yep.
And take that Vanahanaween. onomatopoeia, 18-year onomatopoeia. So, Jason, you are familiar with the rating scale, but I'll go ahead and explain for dear listener, just in case this is your first episode. So we have a highly complex scale of 1 to 8 tentacles. That's because an octopus has 8 of them. And
Thank you for that explanation.
Yes. Yeah. In case you didn't know, not a Cthulhu. They have a lot of tentacles.
So. And a lot of other body parts.
Yeah. So 1 being terrible, 8 being amazing. You can certainly categorize it as we do, since you are also a whiskey aficionado and have experienced many. So yeah, take it away, Jason.
I think this is, I mean, I picked this obviously, so I'm kind of, this is very much stacked in my favor.
Yeah.
But I think this is one of my favorites. So I think in the grand total of whiskeys that I've had, I would probably put this one at a 7.
Yeah. Mm.
Can you tell us the animal you described yourself as that, that relates to this?
as a bear. But I need to caveat this because...
The animal, definitely, right?
Right. And so I did not know about the other categorizations of bear. And so I used to, when I gave conference talks, I would describe myself as a web developer and friendly bear. And it was one of the most like mortifying situations because I was at this conference and I gave a talk and somebody who was at the conference came up after me and was like, hey, you're a friendly bear. Would you like to come to a party that is after the conference? And I realized I put it together in my head what I was signaling.
Yeah.
And this person was so nervous and like he was really like he was taking a risk inviting me to this. He thought he thought that's what I was describing myself as.
Yeah.
And so we were both just like cringing inside out when we realized the misunderstanding. And so I don't describe myself like that anymore because I feel like that is a great way to make everybody feel real weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so the point at which I described myself as a bear was when I it was during this point before I realized that I could be misleading people with my words.
Yeah, that happens.
And to your defense, I can see when you think about bear the animal being like this, and in particular to this particular whiskey about being like kind of robust, but approachable, palatable, like.
So there's
a lot of depth here, but it's like not overpowering.
And what the reason that I would go with the friendly bear, the animal descriptor for myself is that I have what has been described to me as resting murder face.
Hmm.
And so when I am sitting deep in thought, I look like I want to like take a swing at somebody. And one of the things that I've noticed is whenever I go to a conference, if I see the photos from the conference where I'm listening to somebody, my listening face is communicating I'm about to climb across this table. So I always look very like angry. And I am the least angry person in the world. And I think that so one of the things that I've noticed about bears is that bears are very intimidating animals. Like they're big, they've got huge claws, big teeth, and most of the imagery we see of them is like, you know, they're reared up, claws out, all that kind of stuff. But when you actually watch a bear most of the time, they're doofy.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're rolling around on the ground. They're having a good time. They're very like not aggressive animals.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a good like parallel to me.
I think that's been our experience with you thus far. So that's why you're here again.
Yeah.
That and the whiskey. Yeah. All right. So what do you think of this? Mr. Robbie, who doesn't like scotch.
Yeah, so this isn't super scotchy, so it is pretty good. Like I said, I think the Muckety Muck was better. I forget what we rated that, but I think it was maybe a 7. This is a little bit less. I'm going to say like a 6.5.
Okay.
Would you you would drink it again, though?
Yeah, it's very good.
Would you put this on your own bar?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And provide that for folks who do like scotch, right?
I'm doing a very self-satisfied nod.
Yeah,
right
you are. You're feeling, yourself, you know? You might as well just give yourself a little...
Because he was like, I don't like scotch. And I was like,
all right. I bet accept you do. That challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. You like something here. And I just put a couple of drops into mine. And I got to say, it opened up even more. And again, it's still like soft, but more flavors there. I'm trying to see
it
where
it takes that heat out. Like, it's got this very, like, right on the nose, this very, like, aggressive heat that it when you put the dropper in, it makes a huge difference in the whiskey.
I agree with that. And I do recall us rating the Muckety Muck quite well. And I think a lot of it was because it was tasty. It was a scotch that didn't really taste like the traditional scotches that we had been familiar with. I mean, it's a big world out there and probably haven't tried anywhere near enough. Usually my like go-to scotch would be a Macallan. You know, it's very approachable. But I don't think it has the diversity and flavor that this does. So,
you know, do you follow Taylor Poindexter? Have y'all had Taylor on the show?
Not yet, in October.
Oh, you need to get Taylor.
She's scheduled
on the show.
Extremely she's... far out, so
yeah.
we're
yeah.
waiting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But we got there. Well, we shipped her whiskey, so she's on board.
But she had a whole thing on Macallan. I think her direct quote was like, "I don't need to see Macallan again."
Yeah, like I'm at the point in my life where I can just say no to Macallan. Yeah.
Yeah. My father-in-law was a surgeon, and so he always had a lot of that on hand. And then when you do. Family things. It was sort of like, that's the whiskey they have. And I got to try a lot of interesting ones. So again, it felt like, oh, well, you know, I can have this and enjoy this and I'm fine with that. I don't go buy it myself, but this stuff I would definitely would have again, for sure. And I feel like, I don't know what I gave the Muckety Muck, but this would definitely be a contender for an 8 for me.
Nice.
So I think that, like, I think I'd have to try the Muckety Muck again and then try and see which one kind of tops it there.
Side by side.
I need to try this Muckety Muck. I've never had it.
Yeah.
It's good. It's Orphan Barrel. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yeah, but. So they find some interesting stuff, and I feel like that was like a 23-year-old or something.
It was from some distillery that had been open since like the 1800s or something, and they like are not open anymore. So they like, it's like all their barrels they had left.
Yeah.
So it's like you can't buy it after a while, but But so they have it right now.
You better keep it.
Yeah.
And the price reflects that. So I don't know what this costs per bottle, but I think it's pretty tasty and I would definitely come back to it. So yay. Good job.
Yeah.
All right. So we still want to give you some hot takes, but we need to.
We can't remember if we did hot takes last time.
We did. We just didn't get very far because we ended up talking about Tailwind a lot.
I don't think we explicitly did hot takes, though. You talked a lot about Tailwind. Yeah,
I talked about Tailwind?
Yes.
I have so few opinions about Tailwind.
Yeah. I think we were just talking
about Tailwind. The word Tailwind shows up a lot in the transcript.
Yes. That's all I can say. So maybe the computer did other things.
I'm not sure. I don't really remember the context, but
I know that we didn't get to a couple of them with you. So we'll go ahead and do the same thing and get some of the. It won't be Tailwind, so don't worry about that. You have nothing to say about Tailwind.
Yeah, we took Tailwind off the list.
All right, inferred types in TypeScript or explicit types?
I don't know.
Okay.
Hmm.
I don't know enough TypeScript to be able to make that distinction. Like, I use TypeScript, but only until I get autocomplete, and then I stop doing TypeScript.
Mm-hmm.
So probably inferred types.
Yeah.
Using that logic.
Yeah, there you go.
The least work possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, I can't remember. Did we ask these? Did we ask you get rebase or get merge before? Do you remember?
I looked in the transcript.
All right, well then, get rebase or get merge.
I rebase, but really I use whatever the default in the repo is. Like, I don't care. Here's what I've noticed. In my career, I have looked at the Git history in total. Like, I've been doing this for 20 years, 5 or 6 times. Like, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah. All right, fair enough.
That is fair, yeah. Yeah, unless something goes catastrophically wrong and you're looking at who to blame for it, I feel like you don't really look.
Interactive rebases I appreciate it in interactive rebases or cherry picks or something. The things that, like, when you get in the knee deep into some stuff and it gets complicated and you don't blow the whole damn thing up, then I like the rebase. But
I love a rebase. And as soon as a rebase gets too complicated, I'll look at a merge. And if the merge won't work, then I force push main. Nice. I don't care. YOLO.
YOLO. Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
I frequently will like copy the few files I actually want and just blow everything away, pull down latest, and then just copy those back over.
That's right. You teach that repo a lesson.
Yeah.
What do you think about milk? Milk, lemonade, round the corner fudges, mate?
What?
I thought the milk thing on its own was weird, and then you went
there. I just
took
it up a notch.
That was good.
Okay,
that's
perfect.
My contribution to the milk discourse was that I think we're all into it because 2% is roughly our test coverage.
Got him. Nice. I like that. Well, you're up.
Oh, what's the next one?
Good job.
Or do we actually want to ask? Why did you put this question?
Because I want you to
even
ask
aware?
It.
Okay. Did you know even that we were on Front End Feud recently on JS Party?
No.
Okay. Are you surprised, knowing that we are on, that we did not win?
No.
Yeah.
There we go. See, that's an acceptable
I don't think
answer.
Anyone is surprised.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. There we go. Thank you for placating me.
Yeah.
What is your least favorite programming language?
I don't know. All of them.
None of them. They all suck.
I realized about myself recently because there have been a lot of, there's like these really heated debates about like, TypeScript versus JavaScript or Rust versus WASM versus PHP versus React is becoming PHP. I just don't care.
Yeah.
Like I've realized that what I care about is that I have a bunch of silly ideas in my head and I would like for those ideas to be on the internet in a place that my friends can click on them and see the silly idea that I had.
Yeah.
And I used to do that in PHP back in the day and that had good parts and bad parts. I do it today in like Node and JavaScript, and that's got good parts and bad parts. when I can, I write it in HTML and CSS because that's far less complicated to keep running.
Yep.
And it just kind of is what it is, right? And like if tomorrow we're all writing in HTMX, I'm going to learn that and use that too. Like I just don't, I just don't care. Like I want to build cool shit for the internet and the tools are just tools, right? Like they'll continue to be valid until they're not. And then we'll have a different set of tools that let me have my silly ideas. And I think I've had stronger and stronger lack of opinion about building an identity around like what tools you use. Like it, I don't know. It'd be super weird if you like walked into a home renovation project and the guy was like, I'm a hammer guy. It's like, well, okay, but we need screwdrivers. Like, nah, we're going to hammer that screw in. It's like, well, but.
Okay, that's the best analogy.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that analogy. Oh, I'll probably steal that at some point.
I mean, for real, like this is how a lot of people are approaching programming right now. Is
absolutely.
Like, it's the equivalent of saying like, no, I'm a hammer guy. I'm going to hammer that screw in. And it's like, okay,
I use
but
hammers,
it's,
by the way.
It's a screw. You need like. They're like, no. So here's what you do. You just cover the screw in putty and then you hammer it in and then the putty glues it to the wood so it doesn't fall out.
It's totally like, fine. I'm not living in that house.
I mean,
okay.
You're technically not wrong.
Yeah.
There are easier ways. You're like, nope, not for a hammer guy.
Yeah. I think that's the best way I've heard that put.
I know. So I think
amazing.
You nailed it.
Yeah. Nailed it.
Pun intended. But really, to go back on one of the things you said there, which is exactly that. People have associated their identities to these programming languages and technologies. And I mean, you can have pride in your work, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But also, at the end of the day, the output is what matters, and how you got there isn't as important as long as the output is successful.
Yeah, I mean, I've been cracking this joke. Like, there's this comedian, Mitch Hedberg, which anybody born past 1990 might be too young to remember. But Mitch Hedberg had this joke that I love. He's like, you know, I'm a comedian. And so my job is to write down things that I think are funny. Or if the pen is too far away, I have to convince myself that the thing I thought wasn't that funny. And that's one of my favorite jokes because it applies to so many things. And I think that as web developers, our job is to make good experiences that are performant and easy to maintain and fun to use, right? Or if all that's too hard, we got to convince our team to rebuild in the latest framework.
Yeah.
That joke was funnier in my head.
No. That works. I love Mitch Hedberg. It has nothing to do with technologies, but one of my favorite jokes is, and again, it kind of comes back to the simplicity of it all, which is I got to get some business cards because I want to win a free lunch.
So for the first time since the episode where Chuck had the maple flavored whiskey and declared he was going to go get another one, we have a second whiskey in us the same episode.
Yeah, how about that? Okay, so let me tell you a little about this one, folks. We're bringing back a favorite.
What's the name of that favorite, Chuck?
Chicken cock. This one doesn't have the same kind of ornate bottle, but it's still a nice one. This is the Island Rooster rye, and it is a rum barrel finished rye, 95%, 95 proof, sorry, 47.5%.
Very different number.
Yes, I would say it's 95. It's why does this say Everclear? Yeah. I think I'm overpaying. So this is a small batch, says 25 barrel batch from Kentucky to the sand.
Is that how many barrels do you usually have from a
More than per 25.
Batch,
that,
A normal batch would be like way more. So this would be a small batch. They're just saying small batch, but being very specific about it this time.
Okay.
So let's pretend I'm
not 26 barrels.
Yeah, only 25. What happens to the 24th barrel? You know, something of that nature. I can't do this. I was just about to pour my own stuff again.
You're like, oh, big.
What's happening here?
Wait, we're about to get bounced out of the Multnomah Whiskey Library.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't live here.
They've been very accommodating. Yeah. Yeah. It smells a lot like a Hawaiian pizza to me.
I was
like, not just pineapple, but like some meatiness.
I wasn't getting that at all. I get a little lime, actually. Some lime and maybe like just leafiness. Like, you know, those lime leaves, the kefir leaves or whatever they call them.
Maybe some lemongrass.
Yeah, maybe lemongrass, actually.
Just saying words.
I'm always just saying words. Yeah. I know we don't know each other that well, but you've figured that out at least.
You can pick any word and suggest it, and we'll probably smell and taste it.
Hmm. That is not what I expected.
Oh, that tastes much different than the smell.
I feel like we kind of blew our palates out with the scotch.
Yeah,
and we're back to a rye, and I'm like, that kind of tastes like juice.
Yeah. Right, yeah. It's the brown juice.
Yeah. Maybe should have done that in the other direction.
Right, right.
For a rye, it's not very spicy.
No.
Like, it's got good heat on it, but that Boonhoben had the same heat on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is, like, the same general nose and the same, like, heat without the smokiness to kind of back it up. So it feels like a lighter weight.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's actually the case. I think we just kind of went at this backwards.
Yeah. Right. Getting a little.
There's no right way.
Lemon juice initially. I'm getting like some, I'm trying to think of like, it's almost like taste the way bamboo smells. I don't know.
It's kind of candly. Right.
You're getting a lot more botanical out of this than I am.
I am getting so much of that. Like, things are leading that way heavy for me. And then, like, maybe a light pepper finish. But no, like, normal, like,
it's like
woody,
very
spicy kind
of
that I would
plant-y
normally get.
Of some kind. Some kind of plant.
Yes.
Like, very fresh and leafy.
I don't know the rum part of this and how long things were a part of it, but I don't get any of that sweetness.
See, that's all I'm getting. Huh. All I'm getting off this is like the sugar barrel. Yeah. Like the rum.
Interesting. Maybe you're better at this than I am.
Yeah,
or it might just be that like my palate is more blown out.
We're looking for a replacement host. I mean, if you're interested. So.
For which one of us?
It's hard to say. Up to him, I guess. Yeah. Who do you want to talk to every week, you know? Who do you want to talk to? Hint me.
Well, you know, all I do is the intro, really. So you could just record that.
We'll still cut you in on the residuals. It's totally fine. Okay, so come back to the scale, though. We should rate this still. And guest, please go first.
I feel like I'm not going to be able to give a fair rating here, but I would put this at like a 5.
Yeah.
Like, it's good, but I like that Boonhoben better.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely not going to compare the two by any means. I'm going to put this in the range of just ryes. We kind of have like our North Star is the Sagamore rye. Just like it. It's a good price point. It's like very
flavorful,
sponsor diverse.
Us eventually.
Yeah. And that too. Brought to you by Sagamore Rye. But this is interesting. It's not bad. I probably am a 4.5 to 5 myself as well, because it's just interesting. But I don't know how often I want to come back and have this. And that's a shame, because I like saying chicken cock. I'll have the chicken cock rye. I'll have a double of the cock.
The extra large cock.
Whoa. He said it. I didn't go there.
I'm similarly displeased, because I do love them as a brand. But like compared to other ryes, which I love a lot of ryes... Yeah. This, it doesn't do it for me. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, this might be a 3 for me. It doesn't have any spice that I'm detecting. And I need that from a rye. Okay. That's the reason I drink it. Like, I agree that it has some interesting things that you could, like, it's interesting for a couple of sips. But it's interesting in the way that, like, that, what was it, the Boss Hog Magellan or whatever was, like, it's not something that I would drink more than a few sips of. It's like, oh, that's a cool flavor for like a minute. But I don't want to sip on it.
But
so
it was like.
This one's kind of in that category for me.
But I think when I think of rye, the defining characteristic for me is that you start to feel it creep up into your sinus. And it's like not in an unpleasant way, but you just sort of feel that like sinus clearing. It's sort of like having a menthol cough drop or something, in the sense that it sort of like opens your head up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This doesn't have any of that.
No, it doesn't at all. Yeah. This to me feels like it's the rye equivalent of like a kind of fresh Thai meal. Like, it has the flavors that I would get out of a Thai meal. Like, not the spice, obviously.
Are
but
we
like,
drinking the same drink?
I'm agreeing. I agree with you. Yeah.
See, I don't know.
Like, if you had some fried rice with some pineapple or something.
Like. See, for me, I'm just thinking of like, I don't know, something that has, you know, lime and the leaves and all of that. Like, and the lemongrass just makes me think of like Thai food.
Yeah.
Okay. I see where you're coming from.
I know, it was like out of left field with that. And you're like, this is what? This is not pad thai. This is not. There's no curry in here whatsoever. So I get that too, right? Like,
where'd that dropper go? I'm curious.
Yeah, right here.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to circle back around on it.
All right, let's try this with a little water. Let's see what happens.
And maybe that's the problem. We put a little water in and it's a 8.
And then it becomes amazing. Okay, so you have a post debating whether or not grinding is good for your career. What are your thoughts on that?
So this is one of those questions that I feel like has to be answered in person, because it's got so much nuance to it, right? Because the idea of grinding has become a very polarizing thing where it's like, you know, you either are somebody who works all the time and never stops, or you're somebody who, a job's just a job, I don't care about this stuff. And I don't think that's actually what we're getting at. And so I feel very strongly that the idea of being always on is detrimental.
Yeah.
I think that it is extremely important to have space from your work. It's extremely important to do things that disengage you from the work, because your subconscious does a lot of connective work between ideas when you're not engaged with it. And I also think it's really important to have a broad base of interests and skills, because that also allows for lateral thought and connections that don't make sense if you're super, super narrow in the way that you think. So in that sense, I don't like the grind set of like, oh yeah, you know, 80 hours a week, like we're going. I have personally built a lot of my career off of working weird and long hours. And so I do think that there is value and that there is something to be said for this idea of investing in yourself by saying, this is my focus and I'm interested and I want to learn, and putting in longer hours or extra hours, or, you know, doing things that are fun and interesting to you. You can kind of make the job your hobby. And so, mm-hmm. you know, if you do your day job, you're going to code. And then on the weekend, you want to play with an idea and it's code. That is investing in your career, and that is going to make you a stronger coder. It's going to help you learn new things. But there's a push and a pull to it, where if you put everything into coding for long periods of time, you're one, going to become less interesting, because all you ever talk about is code, all you ever think about is code, and you just sort of lose the dimensionality that makes a person. Like, it's not fun to talk to somebody who will relate every single sentence back to what they're interested in, and it's always the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. We've been in those conversations, they're not fun to be in, like, you don't want to be that person. And also, I just have found that folks who get too focused on this and, you know, one, make it their identity, like, you're very one-dimensional, but you also kind of lose your creativity. Like, it's how you become a hammer guy, is you get so focused on this that you forget that there are approaches outside of the one you've chosen that you focus on for 90 hours a week. And so I think all of that, to sum up, is it is okay to put in extra hours when you're learning or when you're excited. It is also very important to give yourself space and walk outside of the career and make sure that you're giving yourself room to breathe and grow. And both are important. It's two sides of the same coin. Like, without one, the other won't give you as much benefit, right? You need them both together.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think that, like, you have to be really honest about, are you enjoying what you're doing or not? Because a lot of people grind just to grind. They're like, everyone has to grind to, like, succeed. And that's different than, like, I'm really excited about this technology and I want to spend extra hours, or, like, my brain doesn't work on a 9-to-5 schedule and I'm more productive in late hours and I want to work longer or whatever. Like, if you're still having fun and, like, it works with your brain and thinking style, then, like, I think that can be okay and a healthy thing to do.
Yeah, I feel like that conflates two things that I actually think are really important to disambiguate. Because on the one hand, I think one of the, I've tweeted this before and it was very contentious, and so this is probably the closest thing to a hot take.
There you go.
That I
and
have,
you brought it.
Is that the most damage that's been done in our industry is that a lot of people code as a hobby and therefore treat their jobs as a hobby.
Yeah.
And don't think about the requirements of the job. They think about what's fun. Mm. And so they build fun stuff at the expense of the business, or at the expense right. of the user, or at the expense of their teams. So fun is very, very important. I am a huge proponent of it. I believe in fun. It's a core driver for me. And also, if you are working in a business, the fun has to be in support of the goals of that business, right?
Yeah,
because
right.
if you ruin the business so that you can play, you won't have a job to play at anymore, right?
Yeah,
like
right.
it has to be in the right order. So to that point of, like, the longer hours being because you're enjoying yourself, I don't actually know that I agree with that. I don't think that they have to be fun. I think that you can choose that, like I wrote this post forever ago called "What Are You Optimizing For?" Mm. And my belief is that as you grow, you will have a thing that you want to accomplish and you decide it's the most important thing, and that's where the most attention goes. And so that will shift throughout your life. Like, you, when you're young, right, it's maybe it's school, and then after school, maybe it's career, and then after a few years, maybe it's family, and then you've got kids, and so your focus is your kids, and then your kids move out, and then you've got something else to focus on, right? Like, it's going to evolve several times throughout your life, and you're going to get a chance to reinvent yourself, but it's always based around what you're optimizing for. And even in your career, you're still doing optimizations. Like, maybe early in my career, I was optimizing for, I want to get really good at running a web dev business, the consultancy. Then I realized that I didn't actually like running the business. I wanted to optimize instead for building cool things for the web. So I chose a different path and got to a place where I didn't have the responsibility except to build. And then I realized that it was more fun to like teach developers. So I started optimizing for teaching, where like web development was the subject that I was teaching, right? And at each one of those turns, I made a decision to dive deep into the thing that I was teaching. And most of the time it was because it was fun for me. Some of the time it was because I knew it was where I wanted to go next and I suffered through it.
Mm.
And so I think that it is okay to grind if you've chosen that thing and you're knowingly making the sacrifice. I am not going to have much of a social life for the next 6 months because I want to build this skill set that will allow me to have the income and job position that gives me the freedom to have that social life in 6 months. Without the time bound, though, now you're just a workaholic and that's just the rest of your career, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I think it's got to be a consciously made decision to choose something that you're not enjoying. But I do think that it can be beneficial. If you know that you got to get from point A to point B, you can say, all right, this is going to be a bad year, but I'm going to get from point A to point B. And that unlocks these things that are fun later.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's type two fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's intent, essentially, and having self-regulation around that and making sacrifices and ebb and flowing in and out of it. So you don't burn out or ruin your life and social experiences or don't have any of those things along the way. Yeah, I think essentially the answer to that about is grinding good or bad is like, well, it depends, right? What's the context?
It's always it depends, right?
Like, yeah.
And for real though, I've that answer gets funnier to me every single time because it scales out. Like at first it's like, which should I use? You know, should I use React or Angular? And it's like, it depends.
It depends.
And it's like, should I focus on my career or my family? Well, it depends.
Yeah.
Well, family, maybe. Maybe just focus on your family.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, don't completely ignore them. But I think even in that context where you're like, to get my family somewhere better, I might be missing for a little bit. But I don't want to miss everything. But I'm going to be real, real busy. You're optimizing for a better place for your family in a year or less and whatever that looks like. And the end goal looks better because you have to, because, you know, maybe you're the provider. And that is like your role in that. And of course, I want to see and be a part of every single thing. I may need to sacrifice 30% of those things for the end goal. But again, you know that like this isn't the, you know, the forward method of operation in all perpetuity. I'm actually going to like, I'll course correct the other way down the line once we get there.
Right.
Yeah, I had some thoughts and then I zoned out for a second. And
it turns out Robbie fell asleep. Sorry. So can you say all that again?
No, I'm from the East Coast, so it's bedtime.
I love it. Then will I ask them? No, you have to ask wake up.
Yeah, so I feel like this is somewhat related, but you had another post that was like, your job doesn't matter, and that's great news. Like, you know, do jobs really not matter? Or like,
they don't. They truly don't. Like, so I've had a really complicated relationship with work my whole life. And when I was younger, I wanted to be a musician. I like couldn't hold down a job. I think I had 20 jobs in 1 year because I was a touring musician. I'd come home, work for 2 weeks and then quit the job to go back out on tour. I thought for a while I would describe myself as unemployable. And my thinking behind that was like, well, I don't do well if somebody's telling me what to do. I don't like being stuck doing the same thing for a long time and all that. And that was, you know, that was a big thing. And then I started my own agency thinking I had to be the boss. And then like, I, at some point during my career, I actually hit this point where I had a contract that paid me enough that I didn't have to do any other work. Right. It wasn't a lot. It was like 120 grand a year or something like that. But at the time I was actually living out of a suitcase and my rent was like nothing. I was barely spending any money. So almost everything that I made was being saved. And the job required like 10 hours a week.
Wow.
So I was on this absolute dream contract of like, they were retaining me for time. It was an R&D thing. They didn't need me as much as they thought they would, but they were, it was a super cool company. So they were like, we got you for the contract. Like, we're going to pay this contract out. And so I had a year of basically nothing to do.
Wow.
And the first thought was, this is great. I get to do whatever I want and I've got a paycheck. And within 3 weeks, I had a full-blown existential crisis. I was like, okay, I was in my 20s at the time. So I'm in my 20s. I have all the money that I need. I have a job that is so easy that it only takes me a day or so a week. And I have unlimited free time. These are all the things that I said I was working toward, right? Like, so my career trajectory was get to this point. Mm-hmm. I'm not even 30 yet. What does the rest of this life mean? Yeah. Like, do I just pedal here for 30 to 50 more years and then die? Like, that sounds terrible. I don't want to do that. So I just panicked. I was like, okay, so what's the meaning of any of this stuff? Why does any of this stuff matter? And I ultimately realized that, like, we don't do anything important. We work on the internet. The internet is, at the end of the day, an information vehicle. And the information that we're conveying most of the time is to convince you to put some dollars into somebody else's pocket.
Yep.
Right? So that is existentially an unimportant pursuit. That means, going to a very like Nietzsche style sense, like none of this stuff matters. It's all meaningless. So the only meaning that is available to us is the meaning that we choose to assign to things. Mm. Because if we search for external meaning, there's always something to tell us that it's not real. You look for meaning in capitalism. Well, there's a million reasons why that's a bad idea. You look for meaning in your community. Well, there's lots of reasons not to have faith in that, in country, in faith, in whatever it is, right? You choose a thing and you look into it, and ultimately you find out that it's kind of hollow because it's just something that somebody else said was important despite a bunch of contradictions that mean that that's not actually a thing. So you then are left with yourself and a bunch of meaningless stuff that other people are trying to convince you should care about,
right?
Because it benefits them.
Yeah. Right.
So what do you do? Like, what choices do you make? Right. And the only thing left to you then is to decide, well, what makes me happy? Like, what feels good to do? And not good in like the immediate hedonistic, like do whatever you want sense, but in the, like, what makes me want to get out of bed? Well, I want to make the people I care about have better lives. I want to create a space that looks more like the space I thought would exist, you know, more equitable, more inclusive. Like, these are all things that I can affect a tiny bit. And so I can go out and do that. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to build some websites, and it's going to be fun. And people are going to pay me a lot of money for that, because for whatever reason, we've decided this career is a career that gets a lot of dollars.
It's a high value. Yeah.
And so I get to take these dollars, and I'm going to build some websites, and I'm going to make some videos for companies, and all of them are going to make some more money. And then I can just reinvest that into the things that I care about. So, you know, I'm going to try to throw more barbecues for my friends. And I'm going to try to make sure that the people whose careers I get involved with walk out of it with like one half step more advantage than they had when they met me. And if those are the things that I do, then I feel like I can die happy because I did something that felt meaningful to me.
Sure.
I'm never going to look back on a website I built and think to myself, that was it. That was my legacy.
Yeah. Until somebody unplugs the computer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Isn't that right? Like, when the power goes out, what are we going to do? Yeah. Like, we're going to look at each other and say, how did I treat you?
You know?
Yeah. Right. And I think that's sort of what I mean by all that is, like, none of this stuff is important in the existential sense. You're not going to be on your deathbed thinking back to that time that you got 10% better conversion rate on a landing page. Like, it doesn't matter.
What you will do though, is you'll probably regret choosing Tailwind.
No. I don't think so. You'll probably be very content that you chose Tailwind.
Robbie will die in his Tailwind t-shirt.
You know what I think the saddest thing that I can imagine would be is that you're on your deathbed thinking about Tailwind at all.
Yeah.
And Adam's that like,
probably
it
wouldn't
works.
Even.
It works. Yes. So, anyway.
Yeah, hopefully my deathbed is not soon, and hopefully by then Tailwind is not a thing. Like,
you know, I mean
no ill will to Tailwind. I love Tailwind, but like, there's no way there won't be other things that are hotter and people use it before, like, by then. So
I mean, seeing how Tailwind ends up in the transcript, because I have not talked about it at all. Y'all just keep bringing it up.
Yeah, this is I'm baiting you. That's all it is.
I'm actually paid by the Tailwind. Yeah. Every time I say it, I get $5. Tailwind.
The Tailwind. Trademark. Hashtag the Tailwind. I mean, you just like them because of like the sailing association, you know.
So I'm an avid sailor, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. You would think. Yeah. Ship shape, Tailwind, an octopus.
Hey, I've been on sailboats twice.
I have sailed probably more than you. I have been on sailboats and sailed.
Do you actually control all the ropes and stuff?
I have done that. I mean, I just did what I was told. You know, go over there, pull this one.
I can do
go
what
over
I'm
there,
told,
do
too.
That, you know, do the
guy
wheel.
Told me, too, of like, yeah, I'm just wrap this around this.
Yeah. I know those things. Yeah. but I couldn't sail by myself.
Yeah, no, me either.
That would be pretty bad. What about you? Do you, Jason, do you sail? Yeah. Have you been sailing?
Are you a boater of any kind?
You're close enough to the ocean.
No.
No. You look like a pirate, maybe. Yeah. Kinda.
You look like you could drive a ship.
Pirate. Yes. Yeah. You could drive the ship in. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've moved to Whatnot at a certain point.
Well, I think we're firmly into Whatnot.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. So let's talk about these like robot camera things. Because I saw a video on Twitter, I believe, where you were like, these eggs, and it literally, you're like, from what I saw, so I'm the layman or whatever, but it's like this little motorized robot thing, and you can control it to kind of do some cool panning shots and stuff like that.
Yeah, so in lieu of doing actual work, I accumulate camera gear.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the latest pieces that I got is a little motorized dolly. And so on its own, it's a modular system, right? So on its own, it goes left and right, or it can go in an arc, and you can hook a camera on that, and you get these cool little rolling shots where it moves past you, or that it kind of spins around you as you go. And you can do really cool shots of really whatever, right? It sits on any flat surface, and that's what makes it so cool. But then it has an upgrade, like modular piece that one will do pan and one would do tilt, so that you also get, as it's sliding left and right or in the arc, you can move it left and right and also up and down. So you can do something like have it move around your computer and then look up and to the right to focus on the person typing on the computer. You know, these sorts of like very cinematic shots that you would see in a movie that have absolutely no place in a video about computers, but oh by God, you're gonna see them.
I think you could take these shots and do either a remake or a Hackers 2 or something like that, and make it a little sexier, because that's in the 90s.
Quite seriously, I just today wrote a little script, and the whole script is built around the idea of doing a cool camera shot.
Yeah.
And it does involve hacking, so we'll see if I can pull this off. Right, like I have the gear. I don't know if that means I can use it.
Right. Well, that's half the battle, having the stuff. You know,
that's true.
I'm sure you can use it.
Using it well.
Yeah.
I guess
critics say?
Well, as G.I. Joe would say, knowing is half the battle. But what they don't tell you is that the second half is way harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You're like, I know it. I can't apply it. Holy shit. And I used to. I thought I was such a smart kid where I figured that, or I thought I figured it out as a kid, because I, you know, in the 80s, I was watching G.I. Joe. And I was like, I know what the other half is. You know, and then you do it. Really thought I was like going somewhere in life.
One of my absolute favorite cases of that is my wife watches the show Alone, right? And so Alone, for anybody who hasn't seen it, the premise of this show is they take a group of people, and then each of them individually is kind of dropped into some wilderness area. Sometimes it's like far north tundra. Sometimes it's, you know, like a heavily wooded space or whatever. And the goal is you have to stay there for as long as you can. And so it involves like you got to make nets to catch fish. You got to hunt. You got to make traps so that you can catch rabbits and stuff. You got to build a shelter.
Yeah,
you got
to
do
key.
Like wilderness first aid and all these sorts of things, right? And it's a very serious show. Like these people are extremely skilled, and the stuff they're doing is extremely hardcore. My wife is interested in being outdoors. Like, she hikes all the time. She's very big on like, let's go out into the woods and whatever. But she's not a camper, right?
Like, she doesn't
do like wilderness survival stuff or anything.
Yeah, for sure.
But oh my God, when she watches this show, you would think that she had been living in the woods for 20 years, because she's watching a show. One of these episodes, one of the guys like trips over a log, lands on his axe, because for whatever reason he was holding his axe out, and he cuts his arm.
Oof.
Right? And he can't get it to stop bleeding, so he taps out of the show. And she is livid. She's like, you never field dressed a wound before. You don't know how to stitch up your own arm. You don't deserve to be on this show.
Like, oh my gosh.
This is tech Twitter.
Yeah.
This is tech Twitter here.
You're passionate about this. Well, I want to ask, are our wives friends?
Because they might be.
They might be, because my wife is very much into that. And she does a similar thing. Oh, it's beautiful. Let's go hiking. Like, it's whatever. And then she's like, cool, let's go back to a really nice cabin or maybe a hotel in town. And, you know,
I think Marissa would camp. She would 100% camp. Yep. I won't camp.
Oh.
I grew up in Montana. My dad used to make me go camping, and I've decided that the closest I'm going to get to camping is a hotel room.
Yeah.
Like, I get mad now in a hotel room because I'm like, my pillow's not right. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to sleep on the ground. No, are you kidding me?
I've done that with my son. I like take him camping a couple of different times. But for the most part, I'm not interested in taking time off to go work, to do the normal shit that I can just have for free in my house or a hotel has. Yeah. Much nicer.
And having bathrooms is important.
Yeah, I've thought about this, and ultimately, I think that the human race has spent tens of thousands of years building toward the point where we have indoor plumbing and air conditioning and readily available food and comfortable beds. And for us to go out into the woods and camp for sport is just spitting in our ancestors' faces.
Exactly. Why are we seeking discomfort?
Yeah.
I mean, unless it's there's just like a very small, less than a handful of reasons why I would desire to do that. And that would be like, oh, you're going to hike for 2-3 days and go to Havasupai Falls and see these like places in the world you have zero chance to ever see any other way. I mean, if I can helicopter in and out, I would opt for that, I guess. But like, that's something I would consider. I can't say I have done it or will actually go through with it. But I've thought like maybe I would then, but otherwise it just makes me mad. I had, even as a kid, like in high school and stuff, I had friends that would go camping and stuff. And it's like, why do I need to go and work out in the woods just to get drunk around the fire? Can we do this in my backyard? Yeah. Like, who gives a shit? Yeah. And then I'll go sleep in my own bed.
Like, it's like the whole like one-upping thing of like people do it, I feel like, because they want to show they can do it.
Yeah.
And like, it feels cooler to be like, I did this thing it was hard work. You know, and then we drank by the fire instead of just drinking.
And I think also another facet of it, and you might be able to appreciate this, Jason, is gear accumulation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you can go down a rabbit hole of like fancy light gear, and that's part of it too. And like, you know, I try to make the woods like your house.
Like any of these hobbies, like all of my hobbies are just patently absurd, right? and I think that for anybody who goes deep on a hobby, like it reaches a point of absurdity very, very quickly. I don't begrudge anybody camping. I don't want to go with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I think it's super cool that people go out and do that stuff. And sometimes people will show me the like pop-up tents that they got for their car or like the way they converted a van. I'm like, man, that's so cool. I would love to do that. But I wouldn't sleep in it.
Nah,
I would drive it to a hotel.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, I want to be comfortable while I'm in between hikes or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah.
We have a friend that we sometimes camp with, and I'm gonna air quote camp because he has an RV.
Yeah.
And it's a very nicely appointed RV, and we will rent a cabin, right? So that we've got like a bathroom and a nice bed and all that kind of stuff. And we just go to this place and like we're in a cabin and they're in their RV and like they stayed in a place for a long time where they had like Wi-Fi and they set up a TV. We don't typically do that because I love the experience of camping during the daytime. Like I like being outside by a lake, reading a book, my phone doesn't work. Like it's just this kind of like peaceful quiet.
Yeah,
right?
Agree with those things, yeah.
And I like building a fire at night and having a meal around the fire, and then we cook marshmallows if there's kids around or whatever. Yeah. And then I go and sleep in a bed. I think I like everything about camping except the sleeping part.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't want to sleep on the ground. I don't know. Maybe if I did more yoga, this wouldn't be such a problem for me. But if I sleep on the hard ground, I just walk with a limp for like days, and it's just not worth it to me.
Yeah, that's reasonable. I mean, I've been in a heavenly bed. Why would I want to sleep on the ground?
Yeah,
you know,
they do make really nice mattresses for camping.
I suppose there's all of the, but temperature regulation. Am I too cold? I'm always either too cold or too hot in these circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all of that. Like,
where am I going to plug in my refrigerator? Like, where do I, how do I keep the champagne?
Well, if you car camp, that solves that problem. Because you put stuff in the car. Like, we would bring iPads and you watch football while camping. Like, you know.
So it's just like stay at home.
That's,
But you have the outdoors around you. Yeah.
No. That's not a disconnection. So, yeah.
Here's the other thing, too. I live in Portland, right? So in 45 minutes, I can be out in a gorgeous piece of nature.
Yep.
And I can also be home in 45 minutes. So I can go spend most of a day out in nature and also be home in time to like take a shower and sleep in my own bed.
Yeah.
And I just feel like I don't know why I would go further than that.
Yeah.
It's kind of,
I feel like you should do some marketing for like Portland hotels. You're like, enjoy nature and then come back and be comfortable with us.
The nature package.
Hilton.
It's got to be Marriott. You got to get those Marriott points.
Sure. Yeah, I've got the Bonvoy.
Bonvoy? Yeah.
Yep, mm-hmm. I've got the Bonvoy. Mm-hmm.
They got the best program.
And they have the Heavenly Beds at the, what is it? Which one of theirs? One of their properties has the Heavenly Beds. That's why I always talk about it.
Need to figure that out because I have not slept in that one.
Isn't that the where we were in Render? What is that one?
It's probably super interesting for everybody listening right now.
Beds, Heavenly Beds.
Yeah. Well, I was in a bed one time.
Their beds anyway. Are so well known that you can get their sheets and all this kind of stuff.
It
too,
is the one, but I'm never going to know what it is. And we're at time.
Is there anything?
Anything
the
you
most
plug
anticlimactic ending to a podcast? I'll tweet the answer later.
Yeah, we'll figure out what hotel we were in that we can't remember. Okay. Anything you want to plug or anything for Ian?
I don't know. I do stuff on YouTube. You should hang out there. Learnwithjason.dev or lwj.dev if you don't like typing a lot of letters.
No, I don't like that.
That's a clutch. Clutch one.
Cool. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you liked it, please subscribe. Leave us some ratings and reviews. We appreciate it, and we will catch you next time.
Boom, 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 boom.